Welcome to the Tell Us Something podcast. I'm Mark Moss, your host. Tell Us Something awakens imagination, empowers storytellers, and connects the Missoula community to the transformative power of personal storytelling. It is a celebration of each other, our stories, and how we move through the world together. All of the stories that tell us something are true. Stories last for 10 minutes and are told from memory. Everyone is welcome to tell a story. The Missoula community comes together for a night of true personal stories, shared live, focused on a theme. Everyone has a story. What's yours? This edition of the Tell Us Something podcast comes to us from Jill Beauchene Albin and is titled Smoke and Mirrors, Watching a Night of Lies Unravel. Thank you for listening.
So in high school, my best friend's name was Jen. And Jen was super cool for three reasons. One, she drove a Ford Bronco. Yeah. Two, she smoked cigarettes. And three, she dated a guy in a band. Yeah. The band's name was Powder Monkey. So, you know, she usually drove. She had the Bronco. It was, you know, straight on from there. She picked me up one Friday night. I think this was junior year in high school. I piled in, and she's sitting in the driver's seat in her usual way, right hand on the wheel, left hand also on the wheel with her cigarette between her fingers, and the Bronco window open just so that when she would drive, the smoke would just be drawn out of the window like a vacuum. It was so perfect. So she picks me up, and I pile in, and we start to pull out, and we're driving through my subdivision, and she's like, Jill, I have to tell you what I did last night. I was like, what'd you do last night? I smoked weed. I was like, oh, okay, cool. And what was it like? How'd it feel? You know, what was the deal? It was amazing. I laughed at everything. I felt so free. We're gonna do it again tonight. We're going over to Evan's house, we're gonna smoke weed. I had never smoked weed before. I was like, okay, I'm in, we're doing this. So we start driving down the street, and I should back up and explain that the story that I had told my father of what we were going to do that evening differed vastly from, you know, the reality that was quickly unfolding. I think I had told him something to the effect that we were going to a movie, rated PG-13, going out for ice cream, something of that nature. And, you know, like a lot of kids in high school, I lied in order to be able to do things. And in my case, in order to be able to do basically anything. I would go, you know, my father, he was not only strict, but I would call it almost hyper-vigilant. He, you know, from my earliest memories, I want to say like first or second grade, at the beginning of the school year, he would call my teachers. So Jill's enrolled in your class this year, and just want to check in and see what your assessment is and what areas you think she could improve on. And is there any extra credit that she could be doing now in order to get ahead? And starting early on, like sixth grade, probably through 12th, it just became a household requirement that I had to bring home every single folder, notebook, and textbook from school every single day on the bus so that we could have our evening sessions together where he would flip through the notebooks and the textbooks and we would talk about what I had learned that day, and he would essentially quiz me on everything that had happened. And, you know, this would go on for probably 90 minutes. Not kidding. And, you know, another example of the hypervigilance would be, you know, sometimes at night I'd be falling asleep. And he'd come in my room and he'd say, good night. I'd say, good night, Dad. And I would hear him kind of moving around in the room. And I would look over and he would be going through my trash can looking for papers from school that I may have inadvertently thrown away. Yeah. So, you know, in order to have any semblance of a social life, I had to come up with fibs left and right. So Jen and I are in the car, off on the marijuana adventure. And, you know, driving through our subdivisions. And we pull up to a guy named Evan's house. And we're pulling up and kind of getting organized, and Jen turns to me, she's like, oh, Jill, there's one more thing you need to know about tonight. I said, oh, what? And she said, well, Evan's mom is home. She's probably going to be hanging out in the living room. This was the scene last night. And I was like, Evan's mom is home and we're smoking weed? Like, what? She said, no, Evan's mom doesn't have a sense of smell, she says. I had never heard of anyone not having a sense of smell, but I went along with it. I said, okay, great. So we walk in the door, and sure enough, Evan's mom is hanging out in the living room with not smelling anything and watching something on television, I think something with Tom Selleck in it or some such. And you know, we say hi, and we start going down the stairs to where the guys are hanging out, and they're playing guitar and hanging out. And you know, we're chilling for a little while, and then lo and behold, the big water bong comes out. And, you know, I had been picturing in my head like a joint or something slightly more benign that I could manage or at least had, you know, knew an idea of how to get started. And I was like, oh, I don't quite know what to do. But they quickly showed me how to do it, and the water bong went around and came to my turn. I did pretty well. You know, I... And Jen next to me doing the same thing, and... You know, the water bong's going around. There's like five of us in the room. And, you know, I only did it the one time. Wasn't quite sure what was going to happen, so kind of left it at that. And it went around a few times. And everything's going well, hanging out. And all of a sudden, I feel these claws on my forearm. And I look over, and Jen is next to me, ghost white. And I'm like, what's the matter? And she says, I'm having a heart attack. And she's dead serious. She's, I'm having a heart attack. And the guys are kind of talking, and they don't quite notice what's going on yet, and her nails are digging ever deeper into my forearm. And I'm like, you're not having a heart attack. You're not having a heart attack. I am. I think I'm dying. And I'm like, okay, you know, it's lie down. So I get her to lie down where we are, and by this time, the guys are noticing what's going on. Like, what's happening? I'm like, she thinks she's having a heart attack. And it's like, I'm having a heart attack. She's just kind of flailing around. She's like, I'm freaking out. My heart is beating out of my chest. I don't know what to do. And I look at Evan, and I'm like, what are we doing? She's like, we're calling 911. Call 911. Call 911. And I'm beginning to form my story of what was actually happening that night, you know. Something that I could retell later, but. So I look at Evan. Evan's just like, shit, fuck, I don't know what to do. And Jen's like, call 911. So he goes upstairs. He comes back down with his mom. I've never seen such a look on a person's face. His mom quickly takes in the circle, the water bong, quickly puts the equation together, and she's like, shit, you know, what's going on here? Within a few minutes, it feels like an ambulance has shown up, Jen's parents have shown up, and two cops have shown up. So Jen got put on a stretcher, carried up the stairs. She was out the door with her parents, who gave me a withering look, you know, as they walked up the stairs. And one cop pulled Evan's mom into a corner for a discussion, and another cop pulled me into a corner for a discussion. And everyone else kind of seemingly disappeared. I think a couple of the guys took off. And the cop was like, what's been going on here? And I said, well, you know, there was some marijuana here. I didn't have any. I don't know Jen very well. I just kind of started hanging out with her and ended up here tonight. You know, I'm not quite sure how this all came about. Okay, well, you're a minor, so I need to take you home. You know, shit. So we get in the cop car, and he's in the front, and I'm in the back, and I'm just thinking to myself, okay, we've got to give this everything we have right now. So I'm like, sir, I really want you to know, I just feel like I've been really mixed up with the wrong crowd, and I'm actually a student on student council, and I'm involved in the National Honor Society, and if you like, I can recite you some poetry, or talk to you about my latest government exam, or just please don't walk me to my door. And the, you know, he's very nice. So, sounds like you're doing quite well for yourself. We pull up in front of my house, and the cop turns back to me and says, okay, I'm going to walk you up to the door. And I said, sir, how about I just walk myself to the door? Like, you don't actually have to come with me. Everything's so quiet, and I promise I'll tell them what happened, and I'm never going to hang out with those people ever again. No, I'm walking you to the door. So we walk up my sidewalk, and I can see that corner of the curtain in the window, the little gap of light, and my father asleep in his armchair, you know, waiting for me to come home. Oh, shit. And the cop and I walk up, and the cop, the door opens, and my dad is there, and he looks at me, and he looks up at the cop, and he looks back at me, and he says, are you all right? I said, yeah, I'm fine. And the cop said, sir, it just seems like your daughter got mixed up with some of the wrong people tonight, and I'm going to let her tell you the story. And he walks away. And so I'm standing there in the foyer, my dad and my mom has come down at this point, and he's just looking at me, you know, what could have happened? Why are you here with the cops? And I'm starting to make up the stories. And I'm like, oh, maybe we, you know, accidentally forgot to pay for our ice cream, or Jen and I got in a huge fight and I had to walk home by myself and this cop picked me up. And I look at my dad and I look at my mom and I don't know, all of a sudden I just got really tired of lying. And I got tired of trying to pretend I was someone that I wasn't. So I told them the truth. And we stayed up until about 2 o'clock in the morning talking about, you know, the dangers of drugs and all sorts of other misgivings and mishaps. But I remember when I went to bed feeling a lot better than I had in a long time and kind of letting them into my life. So my trick, I worked it for a while and then stopped working.
Thanks, Jill. Jill Beauchesne Albin is a communications professional and writer who has lived, worked, and played in Missoula since 2004. She has an MFA in creative writing and an MA in literature from the University of Montana. She recently completed her first book, a memoir of a solo trek into the Bob Marshall Wilderness, which will be available as an ebook in late 2016. The title is yet to be determined, but contenders are Babe in the Wilderness and Naked in the Wilderness. Jill loves getting creative, solving problems, and making a difference in the world. Learn more about Jill on the social medias. At Twitter, she's at Jill Albin. And on Instagram, also at Jill Albin. Tell Us Something is proud to be fiscally sponsored by Missoula Community Foundation, a 501c3 organization. Missoula Community Foundation has been providing leadership to Missoula nonprofits and inspiring long-term philanthropy in Missoula since 2007. For the good of Missoula, forever. MissoulaCommunityFoundation.org. Thank you for your support of live storytelling and local art. Thanks to our title sponsor from the 2015 season, the bookstore at the University of Montana, a local bookstore serving the students, faculty, and staff of the University of Montana, as well as the Missoula community. MontanaBookstore.com. And thanks to all of our sponsors, Fact and Fiction, where books, authors, ideas, and readers interact. FactandFictionBooks.com. Top Hat Lounge, bringing great music to Missoula for over 60 years, the Top Hat hosts a variety of Montana-based artists and has become a destination for national touring musicians. In addition to great music, the Top Hat hosts comedy shows, film, performance art, and storytelling. In addition to great entertainment, the Top Hat offers a unique dining experience centered on local house-made ingredients. TopHatLounge.com. The Wilma Theater. A locally owned and independently operated venue, the Wilma has anchored the Missoula cultural and entertainment scene for almost 100 years. Constructed in 1921 as a vaudeville house, the Wilma was utilized as a movie house for the majority of its history. In the 1980s, the Wilma began to once again host live entertainment. Now, it is a state-of-the-art live music facility within a spectacular historic building. TheWilma.com. Thanks to Casper Junkers, who provided the music for the podcast. Find them at CasperJunkersMusic.com. Podcast production by Mark Moss. Thank you to everyone who attends the events, those of you who download the podcast, and most especially to the storytellers Acton Seibel, Paul Scar, Kevin Harrington, Steve Gonzalez, Susie Richaud, and Jill Beauchesne Albin. Remember, your story matters. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. Check the website to find out how you can tell your own story and to learn about themes for the 2016 season. TellUsSomething.org.